Welcome back to Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. I'm Jackie, and Jessica will be telling you a grisly tale of nobility, torture, and lots of very bloody murders, all about the life and crimes of Guinness World Record holder for the most prolific female murderer, aka the Blood Countess, Elizabeth Bathory. And everybody thinks it's Bathory, but it's actually Battery, like a car battery, kind of, right, Jess?
I think it's actually Bowtree.
Bowtree. Oh.
Like Bowtree.
Bowtree?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Elizabeth
Bowtree. That's all according to Aaron Mankey of Lore, and we're just going to hope that he's right.
Yeah, let's hope so. So thanks for listening, and please follow us on social media and let us know what you think. You can find us on Facebook at Crime Cats, a true crime podcast, where we also have a discussion group where we are seriously loving all the feedback we're getting. We're also on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime and Twitter at crimecatspod. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. I feel like if you guys have made it this far, you might actually like us. It's been a crazy couple weeks, just getting into the fall season and getting our Halloween decorations up and whatnot. But we're super excited because we both love Halloween, and we're extra excited since we are throwing a Halloween party at my house.
Woo! Yay!
And we're going to have a costume contest, and I'm going to win. because I'm actually going to be this week's case. And since the party will have already happened by the time we air this episode, I don't mind just go ahead and tell you guys. I'm going to be our case again, the infamous Blood Countess, Elizabeth Bowtree, which, again, I'll reiterate, Bowtree, which we only know this because of Morbid and Lore.
Because I thought it was Bathory.
I did, too. I always thought it was. Because I remember this case, like, from a long time. Like,
I just remember the metal band Bathory.
Yeah. but there's so much information on her because she's so infamous. So we're going to actually do this as a two-part case. But don't worry, guys. You won't have to wait long. We're probably going to just release this episode and then immediately following release the next episode a couple days later.
Yep, we're going to try to release both this week, and you will have them by Halloween is our goal.
Yes. I actually ended up with 10 pages of notes just trying to get this case all together.
I mean, it's pretty intense. It's a big deal. She was the first official vampire.
Yep. And if you don't know who the Bloody Lady is, you're about to learn. I don't know why I keep picking these foreign cases with these hard as hell to pronounce words. And Hungarian is probably even worse than German in all reality. Yeah. But, you know, you guys go easy because, you know, we're not Hungarian. And I struggle enough speaking English, much less Hungarian.
That's true. Me too.
And there's like some real weird, like, her dad's name is Jorge.
I thought that was like Spanish.
It's like Jorge.
Okay.
Jorge. So we're going to practice that one a little bit. Yeah. but yeah, you guys, I'm also going to go ahead and trigger warning the whole episode. Because
it's bloody.
It is very bad. I mean,
yeah,
it's bad all around. She was not a nice lady, and neither is her family. And neither is pretty much anyone in the entire story. I mean, there's no innocence here, even except for the poor, poor serving girls. They're the only innocents. And they get tortured pretty bad.
I've seen a couple documentaries on her. It's intense.
Yeah, she's a scary lady. Also, this case will have a good bit of history because it is important to really establish the political climate and her family to understand why the things happened the way they did. So I'm going to jump right in. Hungarian Countess Elizabeth Báthory was born in 1560 to an extremely noble family whose wealth and power sometimes matched or even exceeded the king that they served. The Báthory family dated their origins around 900 AD. And according to legend, a warrior called Vitus?
Mm-hmm.
Vitus?
That's what it looks like to me.
Was asked to tackle a dragon that was terrorizing the land of Essex in the Heves County of Hungary.
Is it Hungary or Hungary?
It's Hungary. Okay. I know because I actually know a Hungarian guy.
Oh, okay.
His name is Frank. I used to work with him at the diner.
Oh, nice. Okay. I've always wondered. Him,
but he was an interesting guy. But Vitus, he killed this dragon with only 3 thrusts of his lance. And in doing so, he was awarded Exid. And its castle. He also earned himself a surname, Báthory, which means a good hero in Hungarian.
Okay.
So, you know, the hero of our story is not a hero at all.
It sounds like some Lord of the Rings shit, man.
It's very Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
We'll see. And I think, actually, just jumping right into that.
But so, like, I wonder how much is actually true and how much is just...
Well, and it's so long ago.
That's what I'm saying.
That
so embellished.
It was very embellished. And
probably just some poor lady who slit people's throats and bathed in their blood, really.
Well, I don't know. But... the Countess, she was born in 1560, and her parents, Jorge and Anna, were actually 2 opposing branches of the Báthory family, and their marriage consolidated the Báthory power and influence, and kind of attempted to stabilize the family's uneasy relationship with the crown. Her family actually tended to switch allegiances to whichever power suited them best. One side was the Habsburgs, who were the rulers of Austria, and then the Hungarian crown as well.
It sounds like just like a normal Republican and Democrat.
It is. And one side of her family, her father's side, was like very Habsburg positive, but her mother's side was very like with the Hungarian crown.
Mm.
So he kind of went to her side once they ended up getting married, and he kind of, you know, betrayed his family.
Yeah.
But then they ended up all becoming one family because of their marriage. But that tension still just remained all throughout Elizabeth's life, with all the political unrest. By the time her birth, on August 7th, 1560.
Was she a Virgo? I don't know.
No, she's a Leo. I'm a Leo.
Oh, okay.
I was August 3rd, so she's August 7th, so she's definitely a Leo.
Okay.
Which makes everything make all the sense in the world. We just love the spotlight. And forever, I was like, I don't like being the spotlight. Here I am.
Podcast. Right? Again.
But I guess I do. Her family could boast members... who were prime ministers of Hungary. They also had a Duke of Lithuania, princes of Transylvania.
Ooh.
By 1576, one of her uncles, Stephen Báthory, became king of Poland. She also had an older brother, Istvan and Gabor, and 2 younger sisters, Zofia, with a Z, not an S. Zofia and Clara. But not a whole lot is known about her siblings. But her family, their holdings spanned the lands covering modern Hungary, Transylvania, parts of the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Austria, making them even bigger landowners than the Hungarian crown.
So basically, they were bougie as hell.
Yes. I mean, they were outstandingly rich and super fancy. Like, all of their castles were, like, ordained with gold. And that was not, I mean, you know, think of, like, the fanciest castle in, like, Lannisters.
They're okay. Basically the Lannisters. All right, then.
So, despite her life and nobility, Elizabeth suffered multiple seizures in her childhood. That could have possibly been epilepsy, stemming from years and years of inbreeding in her family, which was really common for the time because families wanted to keep their lineages pure.
So basically that's some Game of Thrones Lannister type shit.
Yep, see? Lannister right there. I'm telling you, this family's the Lannisters, I really think. But but he got some...
Times were wild, man.
Yeah.
Times were wild.
It's really gross, but, you know...
All that shit just migrated to Alabama anyways.
See, it was totally normal then, though. It was not weird.
I know, it's weird.
It is weird.
It's weird. It's fucking weird, y'all.
So at the time, epilepsy wasn't a thing. They didn't know what it was. So they diagnosed it as something called the falling sickness. And treatments included rubbing blood of a non-sufferer on the lips of the epileptic, or giving the epileptic a mix of the non-sufferer's blood and a piece of their skull.
Whoa.
Which is...
That's some shit, man.
And that's, like, as the episode of their seizure was ending.
Whose skull?
Like, put the skull of a non-epileptic in their mouth. It doesn't, like, anybody, like...
So they just gonna go kill people that aren't epileptic?
I mean, supposedly, I guess.
Here we go!
I mean, you can't get a skull without killing somebody.
No shit, man! So,
geez.
Oof. Big oof.
Yeah. I mean, they also believed in bloodletting back then, so...
Okay, then.
But, you know, this really leads to speculation that Elizabeth's killings in her later life were part of efforts to cure this illness that she had.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no evidence of any of that. That's just speculation. So when Elizabeth was 10 years old, she was engaged to...
Wait.
Yes, 10 years
Excuse
old.
Excuse me? It was a baby.
I know.
But...
But back then, it was totally normal.
That's pedophilia, people.
Well, he was only 13.
That's
so he was a child
as well.
That's
still gross.
His name was Ference Nataste. And it was, like I said, completely political. They never even met each other for a long time while they were engaged.
Oh, okay. But weird.
But before her first marriage, before they ever got married... Elizabeth allegedly, and I say that allegedly because there's no proof of any of this, gave birth to a child. And the child was said to have been fathered by a local peasant boy. Supposedly the child was given away to a local woman that was trusted by the Bowtry family. The woman was paid for this act, and the child and woman were whisked away and moved away.
Okay.
Reportedly, her young fiancé, Ference, found out about her affair and had the peasant boy castrated and thrown to a pack of wild dogs.
Oof.
Again, Game
That's
of Thrones
some shit, man.
Remember, did Sansa do that with, what's his name, Ramsay?
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, George R.R. Martin, stealing all your stuff from the history books.
No shit, man.
Evidence of this pregnancy came about much longer after she died. So these rumors were spread by peasants. So the validity of these rumors, it's very disputed. You know, they're, like I said, completely rumors. Elizabeth and Ference married when she was 14 and he was 19 at the palace. And this one is hard. So
Varnov
Nad Tuplo.
Okay.
Kapu. Mm-hmm. And that was on the 8th of May, 1575. It was a very large, extravagant wedding with approximately 4,500 guests.
Wow.
I mean,
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. And that's a lot of money because I just got married last year. I'm telling you. Like, yeah. Weddings are expensive. I didn't even have 100 people at my wedding.
Shoot, I was just a bridesmaid. That's been a shit ton of money.
Right? I mean, God, 4,500 people. Mm-mm. That's a city.
Yeah.
In these days. The party actually raged on for 3 days, including huge feasts and jousting.
Okay.
And also, at one point, there was this game that they played before they got married, where they dressed, all of her bridesmaids dressed up just like her and put on, like, makeup and had, like, actually something over their face. And they walked around him in the middle, and he had to pick out her. They were all,
you know, I've heard like more modern day thing like that.
Yeah, they did that. That's kind of, and he picked her out. He knew which one she was.
Well, good for him, because that would have been some,
right? Can you imagine how embarrassed I would be so in front of 4,500 people? Like,
if my future husband could not pick me out from a group of my friends,
right?
Even I don't care what the, you know, still, yeah. Like, you better know my body better than that.
Yeah, and your voice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, she got to talk.
Yeah, they got to talk and, like, say, oh, it's me, baby. I'm sure they didn't say that, but, you know. Yeah.
Same.
So, as Elizabeth's social standing was actually higher than her husband's, she refused to change her last name. And instead, he assumed her last name. And then Elizabeth moved into his castle, which was his gift to her, was a castle. That was his wedding gift.
Okay, then.
I'm like, Cullen, where's my castle? I mean, I did get at the house, so I need to shut up.
Well, yeah, okay, that's true. But I want a freaking castle, man. Right?
My house is kind of like a tiny castle. But, you know, she went on to spend much time on her own. And she hated being alone. She had never been alone in her life.
True, not me.
And she really hated being alone. And her husband left pretty quickly after their marriage to study in Vienna. And then,
like, a good arrangement to me.
Right? I mean, me too. You get two a castle weeks. And then he leaves. Yeah.
Bye.
And all these new handmaidens to take care of you.
There you go. Sign me up.
Yeah, I would totally not mind going back into the past as long as I could be super rich. But, you know, then after he was in Vienna and he studied for a while, he went on to become the chief commander of the Hungarian troops, leading them to war against the Ottomans in the Long War. And once he was there, he earned a nickname called the Black Knight of Hungary.
Interesting.
Right? Super gothic.
Okay.
Love
yeah,
it.
Love that.
With her husband away at war, Elizabeth managed the business affairs and the estates. Elizabeth's letters to the couple's estate managers show how closely the Countess kept an eye on their affairs. Between them, she and her husband owned thousands of acres of land. On the land were farms, dozens of towns, and 20 castles.
Wow.
Yeah, it was basically a mini kingdom. And Elizabeth really ruled it capably. She continued directives on the most profitable sales of crops and livestock and managed the defense of her holdings. Because she was born into such privilege and nobility, she was endowed with not only wealth, but a lot of education. And as a young woman, she learned to read and write Latin, German, Hungarian, and Greek, which is crazy for those times for a woman to know how to read and write.
And be that intelligent.
Yeah. I mean, she was really known as a very smart, inquisitive woman. We do know that Elizabeth Bowtry had multiple children. Anna, who was roughly born in 1585, and Catalin, who was born approximately in 1594. Now this one I'm going to struggle. Oriska. Oriska. Oh, okay. I like it. Oriska was born probably sometimes in between Anna and Catalin, maybe around 1590. Then in the latter half of 1596, their son Andreas was born, who only lived briefly until 1603.
That's why we get vaccines, guys.
Right? Exactly. And plus, their medical care back then was just absolute horrible.
Yeah.
And then in 1598, their son Paul was born, who became he was probably the most well-known of her children. Because he was very involved with her trial later.
Oh, okay.
Some chronicles also indicate that there was another son, named Miklos, which just sounds Greek.
Sounds like a beer.
it looks Greek, so it's kind of funny. But this can't be confirmed. Records indicate that he was married to Countess Zuzana Zarini.
That's a name.
He may have been a cousin, though, because he was not named in the Countess' will, and he did not appear to have been raised or tutored at their castle like the other children. So
he could have been a bastard.
He could have. He had her last name, though. So that's why we think that he may be a cousin.
Gotcha.
But there's really not a whole lot of information about her kids in general because, you know, she stole the spotlight with all her murdering. many sources say that Elizabeth was trained by her family to be cruel. Many stories include Elizabeth as a child witnessing brutal punishments executed by her family's officers and being taught by her family members, especially her Aunt Clara Bowtree. Clara. Contemporary accounts state that Clara took a lover who killed her husband. And then there's also a rumor that she smothered her second husband herself.
All right, then.
Other accounts have Clara as a bisexual murderess who practiced sorcery in her spare time.
In the next episode of Snap.
Right? She apparently, supposedly, taught Elizabeth how to be a witch.
Okay.
Elizabeth witnessed many acts of torture in her childhood. Upon one occasion, she witnessed the execution of a man accused of selling his child to the Turks. The executioner sewed him alive into the belly of a horse. Like, literally alive into the horse. They cut the horse's belly open, put the dude inside, and then sewed it up.
Wait, why, though?
Because he was selling his child to a Turkish
person. But why all that, though? Like, what?
That's a little extreme.
That's extra, extra.
Yeah, it's
read all about it.
Super crazy. But as Elizabeth watched, she reportedly giggled at the man's head poking out of the horse's belly for the last time. Before disappearing completely into his bloody tomb. That's so gross, though. What a way to die. I mean, I'm sure he drowned in blood.
That sounds like a metal band.
Drowned in blood. Oh. Jeez.
Yep. That's going to be my next metal. My next metal band.
Drowned in blood.
Drowned in blood.
She also watched as a rebel against the throne's execution, whom was roasted alive. Here's another shout out to Game of Thrones, because his captors placed a red hot metal crown upon his head for saying he wanted to be the king.
When did that happen in Game of Thrones again?
Oh, season Refresh one. Me? Season one.
Yeah, well, I forgot
brother,
what happened.
Khaleesi.
With the, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. With the metal. Oh, gotcha.
The golden mm-hmm. or the metal. What was it called?
The hot melted.
Hot melted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa.
Yep.
Yeah, buddy.
His captors also placed him naked upon an iron throne and placed hot coals underneath.
An iron throne.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's all making sense now, George R.R. Martin. I'm on to you.
And his co-conspirators, who were also, you know, talking shit about the crown, were impaled and force-fed his flesh.
You know what I want to do one on?
What?
Vlad the Impaler.
We should. Cullen would be so excited.
That's one of my favorite ones.
That's okay. It's in the books. It's in the books.
Vlad the Impaler.
Elizabeth was watching as all of this unfolded with all of these torturous acts against this crown disputer. And, you know, just laughing it up over there, watching it, taking it in. Not grossed out at all. Probably loved it. But despite all this violence surrounding her childhood, she was actually raised in a religious household as a Calvinist Protestant.
I don't even know what that is. I'm not going to pretend to.
I don't know what Calvinist means, yeah. But I know what a Protestant is. That just means not Catholic.
Yeah. But I don't know what the other, I guess it's just a.
It's probably like Methodist, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different branch.
Of, brand of Christian.
Jesus.
That's great. Jeez in it.
Oh, man. Anyways.
So her lessons in cruelty continued under the guidance of her husband. He saw his young bride infrequently.
Again, that's the way to do it.
Probably on special holidays, sometimes briefly in the summer. Which probably explains why the couple didn't have children for the first 10 years of their marriage. He was known for his cruelty and his cruel treatment specifically of Turks in war. Nadasty was reportedly known to dance with dead bodies and play catch with their severed heads.
What the fuck? That's psycho. Fucked up shit,
that's
man.
Some psycho crap. Like,
hey, let's go in the backyard and play football with this dead severed person. Head.
Yeah. Ugh, that's crazy. Although he was away a lot, he did correspond with his wife regularly and happily dispensed advice on disciplining their servants. And then when he was home, he
would chop off their head and play soccer with it? Okay. Sure,
no. Babe. But listen to what he does when he's home. He offers her new ways to torture her servants. In one account, he has a servant girl taken outside, stripped naked, smeared in honey,
and then you had me up until smeared with honey.
Right? I'm fine with just standing outside naked. That's cool. But then forced this girl to stand naked with honey completely smeared all over her. In the summer heat, being bitten and stung by bees and insects. When she finally drops to the ground from exhaustion, because she's not allowed to sit, she's just standing there for hours and hours and hours.
No.
And when she finally drops with exhaustion, Ference puts oiled paper between her toes and lights them on fire to revive her.
This stuff is some serious messed up.
Yeah.
Like, I would think, like, you know, some of the stuff that we hear now about torture and rape and murder, like, that's pretty bad. But this is some bad shit.
Yeah, and Elizabeth was completely gleeful throughout this incident. Mm. She, you know, was excited to learn new ways to torture.
Man.
In 1601, the household obtained a new handmaiden, Anna Dravilla. Many claim that Anna was a witch and was heavily influencing Lady Bowtry. There are also reports that they went on to eventually become lovers.
Okay.
None of this was substantiated, but again, he was gone all the time. So it could be true. There is no denying, though, that Elizabeth's vast personality change after Anna arrived. She became much more sadistic. As where her husband taught her how to torture people, Anna taught her to murder. No one called into question any of Elizabeth's alleged torturous and murderous activities until 1602 when a Lutheran minister, Istvan Magari, he noticed unusual amounts of bodies of young female servants coming from the castle to be buried. The countess claimed they were all victims of cholera, which was really common for the time, but the sheer numbers is what made the minister suspicious. Because all these girls are coming to him for their burial rites and to be, you know, put in caskets and be buried.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought that was just crazy. He was like, why are there so many people dying? There were also rumors going around her lands that the countess was torturing the serving girls to death in these rooms. These sealed chambers that were out of bounds to everyone except for her most trusted servants. Supposedly she was whipping, beating, burning, and gouging out their flesh and even biting them.
Oh.
Reportedly later in her murderous career, she supposedly bathed in the blood of virgins she tortured, believing that this would keep her forever young and beautiful, thus giving her the name, her infamous titles, the Blood Countess, the Bloody Lady, and Countess Dracula, among others.
People do those blood facials nowadays.
That is true. That is definitely a thing where they put little tiny holes in your face and then smear blood on you.
Yeah.
Which I don't want someone else's blood
on
me.
No, it's your own. They take it from your own body.
Well, still.
Yeah.
I still don't even want blood on me.
I mean, it wouldn't bother me, but I just don't see how it would be beneficial. It's supposed to, I don't know. I guess it's the iron in your blood. I don't know. Just take a fucking iron supplement.
Yeah.
Pop that shit.
I take iron anyways. But yeah, these stories, I think they're mostly myth and pretty exaggerated by her cruelty. There's no proof of any of this. And many of the tales, they just seem to be trying to make her sound worse than she is.
Yeah, but I like it.
I mean, it's definitely interesting, yeah, and it's why she's still talked about today.
True.
But in Morbid's podcast about her, Elena was talking about how the physicality of that amount of blood to actually take a bath in blood, because there would be 10 girls would maybe do half the bathtub or maybe one bathtub.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, the sheer number of girls that she would have to just do that. And plus she's not saving all the blood because she's torturing them. So she's stabbing them. Then what? She's hanging the person up above.
No, I don't think it was necessarily that way. The way I always thought about it is, like, not full-on blood bath.
Like a bubble bath?
No, yeah. Okay, so I know you've probably nicked yourself shaving in the shower.
Right.
I've nicked myself one or two good times on, like, the back of my foot.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst
part.
Like, on your ankle.
And I've done it so bad, at one point it wouldn't stop bleeding, and it turned the bath red.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe a little bit of blood mixed in with
blood.
And it made it look stark red.
Yeah, that would make sense.
That's your blood bath.
Because in the documentaries and in the lore video on Amazon, it's like her in a giant bathtub full of blood. And I'm like, that's just not practical.
A little bit goes a long way.
Yeah, that's true.
A little bit goes a long way.
Plus, you know, the viscosity of blood is
so thick.
It's very thick.
Yeah.
And man, her poor pipes, you know?
I don't think it worked quite like that. I don't think they had pipes back then. You're pulling a Jackie.
But these tales and incidents, they really suggest an irrational rage in combination with chastisement. These punishments were initially designed to fit their crimes. Girls, for instance, who were accused of theft had heated coins pressed into their flesh.
Ouch.
Right?
Have you ever been branded or anything like that?
No.
Not like on purpose.
No, but I literally yesterday burned, well, today actually, burned my hand on my waffle maker. So that was terrible. I can't imagine.
I've touched a hot coin. Like, I don't know, just messing around, putting it over the candle, and it was getting hot, right, obviously. Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, those, when you play in the wax.
In the wax when we're kids. Yeah, yeah, everyone did that.
I was messing around.
And then there were girls who that accidentally made mistakes with their sewing. They were repeatedly stabbed with sewing needles.
That's got to be very difficult, though. I mean, sewing needles are very tiny.
Yeah.
That's just like a tattoo needle.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, sewing needles, they're pretty small, but I think.
But that'd be hard to stab somebody with something that small. It would go into your own hand.
Yeah, probably. That's true.
Not that I've tried. It's just, when you're sewing something, it's like, you have to
push. It's very sharp on both ends.
Yeah, and you have to push through a lot of fabric, and that's why you got, you know, what?
Thimbles.
Thimbles? Thimbles? Mm-hmm. Thimbles?
But then, you know, her violence just really escalated, as she became enraged. She had this terrible anger problem where, you know, she would start out trying to be punishing these girls, and then it would just turn into torture every single time.
Hmm.
Magyari, that's the priest, or minister, my bad. Minister,
same?
Not priest.
Priest.
No, priest is Catholic. Minister is Protestant.
Oh.
Big difference, apparently.
Preacher boy.
I'm not religious, so I don't really know. But Magyari, he reported his suspicions to the authorities, but nothing ever was done. They never investigated any of his complaints because the girls were serfs. They were serving girls. They had poor families.
It's kind of like, you know, when prostitutes get murdered.
Exactly.
These days, the police they're don't like, investigate it because they're such, quote, low lives.
Yep, yep. And, you know, you know what they told him? They told him that if the families wanted to raise a complaint, they should bring it to the attention of Ferenc and Elizabeth herself, the alleged murderer. They wanted them to go confront her about it.
Right. Yeah. Makes total sense.
So, yeah. So basically nothing was done. But that's mostly largely because of her immense wealth and power.
Well, that goes a long way.
But
even in today's society.
That's very true. But don't worry. She'll get hers. Or will she? So this is where we're going to leave you off for now. Don't worry. This episode will continue. Well, this is 3. Episode 4 will continue the story of the Bloody Lady, and it will be out on Halloween.
I'm super excited for it. I think that learning about her is very interesting. I already know a lot about her, but I'm finding out little details that I didn't know. I just find her, I've always found her pretty interesting, but I like the old ones. That's why I want to do Vlad the Impaler.
We also want to start shouting out our 5-star reviews and thanking you guys for supporting us. So if you do leave reviews, please leave us your name so we can thank you.
And I would love for you guys to leave where you're from. So you don't want to leave your city, leave your state.
Yeah.
So that way we know where everybody's coming from.
So that way we know everyone who listens to us is our friends.
Yep. Let us know who you are, please.
We have several from Apple Podcasts that we'd like to thank. We only know 2 of you because you're actually our friends.
thank you to LMCJRB, who I know is my friend Leia.
Thank you to Hi Kels, who is my friend Kelsey. I really wish the other platforms had rating systems, but they don't.
You can always leave us a comment or a rate on Facebook, though. Or yeah. Instagram. We're pretty social. We answer our messages.
Yeah. Thank you guys for who do follow us on our social medias. So we do want to shout out who are really active in our group, like Melissa McQuillan, Megan Kennedy, and Paul Hawkins, who's actually making us shirts.
I know. He's so awesome. I cannot wait to see them.
So, yeah, those are going to be here on Friday. So, we'll show you guys a picture of those. Yes. We're excited about that. So, thank you guys so much for your support and your kind words. It really keeps us going.
And again, we're on Facebook at Crime Cats, a true crime podcast, where we also have a discussion group that we are seriously loving. It's so much fun to interact with you guys on a daily basis. We're also on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime, where we post a lot of funny memes that's related to true crime.
Yes, and then, we love memes.
Yeah,
totally. It's the meme culture.
It is. I'm the meme queen.
Yes.
Not really. Jessica's husband he's my meme source.
He is the best about memes. Well, he doesn't use Facebook or Instagram or anything. He is a Redditor.
So he finds the ones that we haven't seen yet.
Because all these memes that we see on Facebook are all from Reddit.
And they are all repetitive by the time we've seen them.
Yes, because Reddit is the freshest source.
Yeah.
Even though I don't like Reddit, I try.
I used to Reddit. It's all right, but whatever. There's become too many platforms for me to keep up with.
I know. I'm like, what? How many freaking places do I have to go to?
I've stopped using Snapchat. I only use that for the filters when I want to do something stupid.
Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram.
Facebook and Instagram. I try and use Twitter specifically for our Twitter.
I don't use Twitter at all. I don't know
how to use it. I've never been a Twitter user.
Me either. I use LinkedIn for work. So that's about it. But we're also on Twitter at CrimeCatsPod.
And I try and keep up with it. Sorry, guys. Reach out to me and tell me I suck.
I don't even know what it looks like. I've never been on our Twitter account before, so I don't even know. But thanks again for listening.
And we'll see y'all on Halloween.
Stay spooky.